My name's Norm Farrar, and I'm a host of a podcast called Lunch with Norm. It's the Amazon FBA and e-commerce podcast every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We have a room every Thursday at 1 o'clock called Ecom Weekly, and we bring you great new topics, and we dive deep into them each week. Just a couple of things. The room will be recorded, so if you have any questions, please raise your hand, and we'll bring you up on stage. If you don't want to be recorded, don't raise your hand. And also, we want to provide just really great content here. You know, it's content driven. We want to just share what we have with the experts that we bring on. So if you do come up on stage, please don't pitch. If you've got a course, if you've got something else, you can do that in another room, or, you know, just we just want content. And by the way, Olivia, who just joined us, she's pretty quick on the mute button. So anyways, by all means, ask questions. We really do want to have an engaged room. The other thing I want to talk about is if you like what you're hearing, please go up to the top left and see Startup Club and click the greenhouse for more notifications. And that's on all the different rooms that are available through Startup Club. And if you like what you hear, please follow the speakers. So, all right, so let's get started. Today we are talking about sourcing in the USA. It's something new. We don't talk about that. We usually go out to China, or we're hearing a lot more people going to India now, but different countries because of some issues that are happening in China. Long delivery time, containers are horrible, trying to get a container, and just the wait time. So Afolabi is going to go through this. Afolabi, can you just a brief introduction of who you are, what you do?
Thank you. My name is Afolabi Irogun. I've been sourcing products and developing products for over 20 years now. My journey started when I invented some shoes, and I was looking for someone to help me make it. I couldn't find anybody, so I found myself in Taiwan and then to China. I've manufactured a lot of products, developed a lot of products. Since then, I was with Amazon at the very beginning of their before FBA, actually, in the early 2000s, when they were transitioning. I've worked with Alibaba on several cool projects, privately done with them. And so, you know, I developed a lot. I just enjoy, you know, developing products. I enjoy the manufacturing process. I love to source products from all over the world. I've been buying products in the US for a long time, even before COVID. I just exited a brand that we had over 60 or 70% of our products were actually sourced in the US, and they were very, very good. So we had great experience, you know, buying products here in the US. Thanks for having me on the show, Norm.
I got fat fingers. I'm trying to find that that mute button. Okay, so one of the things I just kind of wanted to go through, a deep dive. But one of the things I want to point out is that we're not just going to ramble. We're not going to go on for 2 hours here. We want to give you information over the next 30 minutes to 45 minutes. We might bring it up to an hour. So if you do have questions, we really do want to promote questions. First of all, sourcing U.S. isn't for everybody. Can you talk a little bit about that, Afolabi?
You broke up just a little bit. What was that?
Yeah. So sourcing in the U.S. is not for everybody.
Yes.
Can you talk about who it is for, the niches, the categories that are best suited for this?
Awesome. Yes. Many people would come, looking for sourcing in the U.S., but like you said, it's not for everybody. So we want to make that clear that some products are just not well fitted or well suited to U.S. manufacturing. If your product is bulky, your product is big, your product is, you know, like foam, your product is wooden, you know, it's made out of wood, specialized fabric, premium chemicals, metal tubes, extrusion, plastics. These are all the products that I feel that you would really enjoy making in the US. I also hear the background noise. I don't know where it's coming from. It looks like someone is unmuted somewhere.
Yeah, but nope. If you want, you can make me a moderator so I can mute people. All right. How about we do that? Okay. There you go, Olivia. All right. Okay. Avi, can you continue?
Yes. So if your products are made of wood, some metals, some cushion, if your products are big and bulky, if you have specialized fabrics, specialized chemicals in your products, if you have extruded products, a lot of fabricated products, the US will be very good for you because wood products, especially wood products, are really, really great. If your product include like powder coating, sandblasting, electroplating, these are products that US is really good. The products that will not fit into this category would be products that have a lot of touch points. So if your products are very labor intensive, like sculpting, like they use a lot of handmade stuff to do, it would not fit with the US manufacturing because there is, labor rates are very high here in the US. So we want to try and stick to products that people touch it less. In some cases, even if your product has a lot of touch points, you might want to redesign it and just optimize it to use less, screws or less nails. I see products all the time that has like 20, 30 nailing in it. That's not so good because people will be nailing something 20 times. If you're paying in the US, if it's like $25, $30 an hour for your nailer, in China, it's about $2 or $3 an hour. So those kind of products will not fit into US manufacturing. But the bigger and bulkier your product, the better for it to be made here in the US.
So we saw about a month or two ago, a wooden product. Mm-hmm. That I would have never, ever thought would be competitive with China.
Yes.
And you told me that you were able to find a company in the U.S. because they were more automated mm-hmm. than the Chinese that took out those touch points. And actually, what was the landed cost? It was, it was $20 or $30 compared to like $90.
Yes, it was a lot. We had the products that have been made in China for $17 or so. And by the time it's landed in the US, it was over $30 or $40. We were able to get it here in the US for less than $27, which is really good. And even in the US, by the time I got to the factory here, that's another thing about the US manufacturing is that you're going to see a lot of highly experienced engineers on board, that are working at this factory. These are people with 30 to 40 years experience just making products. By the time I took the products there, they were like, no, we could redesign this product. We can do it this way. We can do it that way. I'm like, wow, I didn't know I could do that. So by the time they came up with the ways they were going to do it, it came up to be way cheaper here in the US, and it's a lot of savings.
And that's a good point that you brought up, because let's say that you are using a specific type of material. Sometimes it's just thinking outside of the envelope, going to a product innovator or going to the manufacturer and seeing if they can produce it a different way or with a different material that is more cost effective and possibly even better than the original material that you're using.
Yes, correct. And the US leads in material science, believe it or not. So there's a lot of materials that are now available that people don't even know about. Like if you're making your products with wood or you're making it with some plastics, there are so many different new products out there now, new materials that you can make your products in. I mean, by the time I got to one of these factories, they showed me all these names of materials that I can't even pronounce their names, and they're very eco-friendly. And I'm like, what is that? They say, oh, this is a you know, polyurethane, this is polycarbonate, this is this. I'm like, can I use it for this product? They say, yeah, it's actually 200 times stronger if you use it for this product. And it's good for outdoors, it's good for indoors. So I was really lectured about material science by the time I went to all these factories, and I'm still learning. So if you're not married to a specific material, you might really want to look at redesigning your product or exploring other materials that can actually cost you less. Another good thing about these US-made materials or chemicals is these materials are exported to China. So China is one of the leading buyers of US-made materials and goods in terms of, I mean, raw materials and chemicals. DuPont, you know, 3M, all these companies make materials and chemicals here in the US, and most of your Chinese factories will buy from the US, ship it to China, have your products made only to ship your products back to the US. So if you can just cut a deal, find some really good suppliers that may be able to use this same product and make it here in the US, you're going to save yourself a lot of time. You're going to save a lot of headache, a lot of hassles. Your product quality will be impeccable. Very, very good quality.
And one of the other, couple of other categories that we skipped over, I sell in the beauty category. And beauty products in the U.S. are incredible. I trust them. That's one of the I don't know about you, but made in China beauty products, I just got this thing in the back of my head when I buy something. I much rather put my faith into a Canadian or U.S. manufacturer for beauty products. And also, I'm also in the pet niche, but, you know, selling food or like pet food and just other types of pet products, all in the US. You don't have to go elsewhere. I mean, there are tons of opportunities to sell different types of food from around the world, but US manufacturers, again, raw food, that's really big right now for pets, all in the US. You just have to, you know, find the suppliers. And that leads me into the next question. We talked the last time, a couple of weeks back, about a couple of sources. How and where do people find these sources?
Great question. So I know I've been a big talker about Thomas Nett, but the more I use Thomas Nett, the more I'm realizing that Thomas Nett is just a directory, not a sourcing platform. And a lot of people have confirmed to me as well that all the suppliers there are just kind of dormant, you know. So what I do now is if I do find any supplier on Thomas Nett, I would go to Google, I would go to LinkedIn, I would go to YouTube to go and see the activities of these suppliers. I want to know if this supplier is hungry enough. Because if you just get them on, if you just contact them on, through Thomas Nett, or you send them an email, they may not reply you because they're not hungry. But if you go to, if you copy the supplier's information from Thomas Nett and you push, you know, copy and paste it into Google and you see some real recent activities, or you put it in YouTube and you find that they have videos and a tour of their factory, that tells me they're hungry. They really want to do business. They're looking for, you know, businesses to do. They're looking for products to make. But by them just being on Thomas Nett, I found out that doesn't really mean anything. They're just there. Thomas Nett just has a directory. It's just like Yellow Pages. You know, some phones may be on the Yellow Pages and they're not working anymore, right? So in the same way, Thomas Nett seems to be like that. So what I've been doing is if I find any supplier on Thomas Nett, I'll go to Google, I'll verify them, I'll vet them in Google, LinkedIn, YouTube, and also there's another one I use this day, Facebook. I wanted to see if they have a Facebook page, if they're promoting, if they're posting on Facebook. That's another way to find them. But Google has been the best for me so far, even better than Thomas Nett.
You know, we've talked about this before on other podcast or clubhouse rooms, like on Ecom Weekly, and that's understanding the culture in China. So when you're first negotiating over there, you know, what to say, how to introduce yourself, just different things. Well, you have to do that here too, because yes. What we found with manufacturers, and I come from a manufacturing background. My family's been in manufacturing forever, but they're not used to e-com sellers. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden somebody gets an email from somebody saying, hey, I'm interested in 250 pieces. I'm an Amazon seller. That's really not going to turn their crank. How do you approach them?
So the script that I've been using so far that it's worked very well is, one, I call them up on the phone. I really don't send them any email. I call them and then they tell me to send them an email following up on our conversation. And the script I use is, hey, how are you? I'm in the process of bringing my production from China back into the US because I want the quality here in the US. Do you think you can make some of these products for me? So what that script does is, first, it appeals to the emotions. I found out that when you use the word bringing your manufacturing back into the US is a major, major selling point. All of a sudden, they wake up. You know, they were like, oh, that's nice. You know, so I tell them that's what I'm about to do. And I have a couple of products that I want to give them to make for me. And the next thing they're going to ask you is, what are these kind of products? So you have to simplify your product very well. Don't make it complicated. Say, I'm bringing my wall shelves, or I'm bringing my wooden organizer, or I'm bringing my fabricated steel hanger, or whatever. Make it very simple. Don't go into using, you know, complicated words. And they're going to open up and they're going to start talking to you. In most cases, they might have to transfer you to their salesperson, which have happened to me a lot of times. They'll say, okay, hold on, let me transfer you to our salesperson. And when you talk to the sales guy, use the same script. I'm making some products in the US, I mean, in China now. I'm in the process of bringing my production back locally into the US to help the economy here. How do you think we can work together? 9 out of 10 times, it has worked for me.
I've gone to, for one of my products, I've gone to Pet Expo and walked the floor. And that's, by the way, is another great way to find suppliers. So go into your association. So for me, you know, I would go to and walk the, like go to trade shows and walk the floors, talk to the people there, and you'll be surprised how many people that you can talk to. Now, what happened to me though, I went into Pet Expo. I was trying to find somebody to manufacture or not manufacture, but provide me with a certain pet product. And I found a very hard time because my badge said, you know, basically e-com. It had e-com on the badge. Nobody would talk to me. I'd have to really fight for attention. And until you get them and you say, yeah, well, how much do you sell? That's going to be the first thing out of their mouth. And, you know, if you are selling, if you are experienced, you could blow them away. So when I told them, oh, you know, I sell this many a month. All of a sudden I got not only their attention, but the head guy in the booth came over, started talking and started to build a relationship. I found the relationship. Like if you go to China and you go to Yiwu, or if you go to the Canton Fair, you get a friendlier group of people that want your business. Again, coming into e-com in the US, it is tougher, but you have to fight for your product. You have to fight for your brand. And I think you have to ask the right questions. If you come in as an underdog, oh, I'm testing out a product and I only want a couple, you know, 100 or 250 or 500, you have to really show that, first of all, yeah, you are developing this product. Like Afolabi said, I have a successful brand that I sell from China. I'm bringing it over. I'm exploring my different avenues. And I'm just looking for somebody to manufacture. Don't look like you're just starting out, you know, just make sure that you talk with confidence. Again, associations are probably a great way to start. Go to trade shows. That's an incredible way to open up doors for you. All right. So, Afolabi, any other ways of communicating with your U.S. suppliers?
When you say trade shows, let me touch up on that a little bit. Let me give you a real life scenario. We were looking for a foam product, right? And getting to the, trying to look for a foam manufacturer in the US for like a cushion or foam, like a pillow or something, we discovered on the website of one of these manufacturers that says, oh, we belong to the, you know, Foam Products Association. I'm like, what is that? You know, I clicked on the link. Guess what? Took me to the website of the trade association for all the foam manufacturers in the world. And you can now search, you can now go to US section, listing all about 40, 50 foam, major foam makers in the US. And then you go to these foam makers and then you go one by one, you can go through their website one by one. So trade associations, sometimes they call it guilds in America, G-U-I-L-D-S, guilds. It could be a guild of fabric makers or guild of fabric mills or something. You could check out all those guilds. You can check out all your chamber of commerce. Another website I wanted to throw in there is madeinamerica.co. madeinamerica.co. You're going to see all the products that are actually being made here in the US. You could sell your products on there too, but I just use it for the manufacturers. There are direct contact with manufacturers of like really, really cool products. A lady was talking to me. She wanted to make some cookware. And I'm like, Leah, go to madeinamerica.co. You're going to see a bunch of cookware makers there. And voila, she found them. Made here in the US, very high quality, you know, knives and metals and bakeware and stuff like that. Okay, so that's another one to do it. Contacting them, definitely you have to call. Definitely you have to research on Google, research on YouTube, research on LinkedIn, research on Facebook, and call them and then follow up. And everything that Norm said about introducing yourself, they don't know about e-com. These are old school factories. These are factories that are owned by 80-year-old guys. You know, so they don't know anything about e-com. You talk about e-com, they're like, what is he talking about? You know, but if you talk to them in their terms, like, hey, I need 3,000 pieces of this on a monthly basis, then you get their attention. I need 10,000 of this on a monthly basis, then you get their attention. I need 500 or 600, whatever it is. They want to talk in data. They want to talk in numbers. So the more you talk about numbers and data with them, there you get their attention and follow up with emails and continue the conversation until you strike a deal with them.
Yeah, we forgot to mention, too, that another way of sourcing on Google is to type in either manufacturer, private label, or white label, and whatever your niche is. So those are a couple of quick search terms that you can use, and you'd be surprised. But that's actually, Afolabi, that is a great point. If you find a manufacturer and you see the association, it will help out tremendously. So before I get to the question from Tom, just want to reset the room. You're listening to Ecom Weekly. We are talking about finding products and how to find products in the U.S., sourcing products in the U.S. If you like what you're hearing so far and you want to hear more from the Startup Club, click the greenhouse. You get notifications. If you like what you're hearing, please click on the individual and follow us. Okay, so Tom, welcome to the stage.
Hi, everybody. Did you receive my message, right, both of you? So where to find made in USA brands in the United States? And also foreign made like China, Thailand, whatever, Turkey, in the United States. Problem, as you mentioned, it's now transportation takes like 2-3 months and some more bureaucracy going there. The long run gonna be trade war between China and the United States. So I believe so better we can find in the United States, is that right? Problem is where to find the warehouse or whatever. So I'm an owner from wholesale platform. So we're developing our app app in the platform is coming very soon, almost finished. So we're looking for research. Thank you.
Okay, Tom. So yeah, that's exactly it. When you start talking about the extra 25%, cost, Trump tax, that does add up. You have to pay your HTS, so your tariff taxes. That's an add-on. And, you know, sometimes even outside of China, if you're not going to the U.S., there are alternative places right now that you can go to. India, Vietnam, you can go into South America. There's lots of different places. But the opportunity to come back and create what I see as perceived value. So I feel that if you're dealing with somebody who's coming in with a $10 Chinese product, if you package the product properly and you send it out there with the proper copy and the proper listing and the consistency within the brand, you'll have a much higher selling or perceived value. You'll get a higher price when you go out to market. Now, is that going to happen with every product? No, but I can guarantee that anybody listening, if you're looking at a made in the USA product, I look at it as a higher perceived value. So also warehousing costs, there's all sorts of fulfillment centers across Canada that do the 3PL. If you're selling on Walmart and, you know, doing fulfillment for them, FBM over at for Amazon, or I'm going to backtrack a bit. When you're coming in from China, a lot of people bring in full container loads. You can work out a production schedule with a U.S. manufacturer, so you can buy less, but over more, like over a monthly period, over a two-month period, and split the shipment over to your 3PL and sending half the shipment over to Amazon, which will save you a ton of money. So one of the things that comes up all the time, we had it yesterday in a group. They were talking about inspections. You want to talk about that, Afolabi?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. In the U.S. here, there are inspection companies. They're called independent inspection agencies. So when you're Googling them or you're trying to find them, that's what you should type in: independent inspection agency in the U.S. Please add in the U.S. to it, or in USA, so that it doesn't give you a worldwide result. Some of them are SGS. See, SGS is also in the U.S., and they do inspection, they do factory audits, they do all those things, ISO certification verification in the U.S. as well. One of them also is called ProQC. ProQC International. So if you go to proqc.com, you're going to see them. There are a bunch of independent inspection agencies here in the U.S. But a word of caution, like Norm, like you were saying about some of your customers, the U.S. factories are very, very protective of their IPs, of their tech, or their processes. They don't want people just coming in and looking. They don't know if you're a competitor. They don't know if you're a spy. They don't know anything. So, you know, you got to be careful with that. That's why they're very reluctant to just let anybody show up as an inspector. You have to come from an approved and, you know, generally known inspection agency company before they will let you into their factory. Another reason why is because some of these factories have hazard conditions, or they have like some processes whereby just any Joe Smith can show up there. You have to be geared up in a certain way. You have to wear the proper clothing and stuff like that. So, but you can search for independent inspection agencies. You can go to ProQC. You can go to SGS. They do have inspection here in the U.S.
One of the things we talked about with U.S. inspection, the next question people usually will ask is, well, how do I protect myself? How do I protect the product? At least in China, when you use an inspection agency, if you fail, you've got something in writing to either fix the problem or you know the next step. And one of the things that you can do is, first of all, you can have a production sample made, and that production sample can be signed off on. And you can stipulate that the production run has to match this. Also, one of the things you want to build in to your PO is that there's a defect ratio or a defect percentage. And if it goes over that defect percentage, what's going to happen? Can you get a credit? And this is going to help protect yourself as well, because in China, they're, gazillion miles away. It's very hard to do it. So you're leaning on an inspection company to do this. The other thing you want to make sure is, is there any certification? See it, like just ask them for it, and make sure that you just put all of this into your contract. So any of anything that you're looking at, the time, the lead time, what happens if they don't meet the production? What happens if something, let's say that there is a run, and I've seen this happen, where you've got a really quality product, and in one run, they use an inferior product. Well, what happens? So I would build that in so you can build at least some foundation in case you have to go to court. I don't know if you have anything else to say to that, but you in America, you don't have to have that inspection company. It is a lot harder to say to a manufacturer, oh yeah, we're going to have somebody come in and inspect.
Yes, you're right. I mean, the quality of product in the US is generally a lot higher. And when something goes wrong, you don't really have to fight much. They will just replace it for you. I remember starting out a brand several years ago. We started with some US made metal materials. And every time we had issues, they just send us, replacement immediately, and they add in a little few extra at no cost to us. They cover the cost of shipping, they cover everything. So, correcting mistakes or defect rates here is a lot lower, and you don't have to have sleepless nights, on getting your, products replaced or compensated or whatever. I have some few tips here now before we take more questions, so I don't want to forget. If you're selling on Amazon and you want to, you're reaching out to a US factory, you don't need to send your Amazon link to them. Just send your product specs or product photo, product dimension, because some factories here, once they see how much you retail for, they might want to, gang up the price on you or whatever. I've seen it happen before to me. So you got to be careful with that. Unless you don't have any other option, do not send your Amazon link to them, because they see your product selling at $99.99, and you make this product in China for like $8 or $10. They'll be like, oh, that's a lot of margin. We should be able to get a lot for this product. Not all US manufacturers do it, but some, especially the smaller ones, they might do it. So that's one tip. Another tip that has been really helpful to me is, if you call a company, if you find a company on YouTube, Thomasnet, Google, whatever, and you call them and they say, oh, no, we don't make that kind of product, don't just hang up the phone. While you have them on the phone, say, hey, thank you so much. Do you know of any other factory or company that may be able to help me with this product? I did it like 2 weeks ago, and the guy was willing. He gave me two major companies that could help me. It's like, oh yeah, they are bigger than us. They are more of a manufacturer than us. So reach out to them, ask for this guy, tell them, we sent you from this company or whatever. They're willing to give you free information. If they cannot help you, they will point you in the right direction on to who can help you. The third tip is the word custom. So when you're researching US manufacturing and you all of a sudden in their profile, you see custom. Well, custom could be good and could be bad in US manufacturing. The good side of custom, let's say they call themselves custom powder coating company or custom extrusion or custom finishing company. That means they can only handle small order. They can only handle small order. So if you're doing 100 pieces, 200 pieces, any factory that has the word custom in their profile or their description, or they pride themselves in doing custom made stuff, will be your best bet. They will do low runs for you. They will do smaller. They will do 50 units. You just want to prove a concept, you might want to go with them. But if you're already selling 2,000, 10,000 units a month, custom may not work for you. That means they're a small shop. You might want to look at companies that have full manufacturing capacity or full factory. Those are the ones that can handle a lot of orders for you. Another thing is, if you go to a factory and let's say you want to make a metal product, and they say, "Oh, we can do the metal. We can powder coat the metal for you, but we don't bend. We don't bend our metals." Just say, "Okay, no problem. I'll go and find a factory that will do the bending. You do the powder coating. How about that?" They'll say, "Okay, yeah, we can do that." So you might have to work with more than one factory when you're dealing with US suppliers. It's okay. In China, we do see a lot of factories that have everything in-house. But in the US, I found that many US factories are very specialized and they're very rigid. They don't bend. They would not say, "Oh, let's try and see if we can do it." No, if they don't do that kind of process, they will not take your order. They will say, "We will only paint. We are painters. We will paint. Or we are powder coaters. We will powder coat. We are extrusion person. We will do. We only cut metal and polish metals. We don't pack. We don't do this." It's okay. Just find the ones that will do that other piece that this other factory is missing. Or you can ask the factory and say, "Hey, do you know of any factory that can do the bending for me?" They're like, "Oh yeah, our sister factory, or you know, factory ABC about 10 miles down the road, they can do the bending and cutting, and then we work with them all the time. They'll send it to us." Bingo, that's your answer right there.
Perfect. I see Roz is up. Hi, Roz.
Hi, Norm. Hi, Afolabi. So nice to see you both here. I have a question about manufacturing something in the U.S. that would require a custom formulation. So let's say, hypothetically, I want to manufacture a cream for your face or pet skin, and I call a company that does a manufacturing company that specializes in doing this. Would I file something to protect the confidentiality and the exclusivity of the formula before I ask them to do this work, during the work, afterwards? What sort of precautions, if any, would I need to take in that endeavor?
That's a really good question, Rosalind. Very, very good. I happen to know a lot of manufacturing or filling in the cosmetics industry here in the US. It's very tricky. So once they will not sign any agreement to protect your formulation. That's one thing I found out. They will not do it. So what you could do is you can find a mixer and you can find a filler. A mixer, you give the formulation to, the mixer is usually a smaller facility. They can sign some sort of documents to protect you because they know the process of mixing your ingredient in the right amount. And then the mixer will transfer drums and drums and drums of your cream to the filler. And what the filler does is they just, you know, fill it into bottles, and you can also private label it. So you might need two entities to get that done. And, you know, because like in Syracuse, New York, I know some of these large cream manufacturing companies that they will not sign anything. You could probably get away with hacks, you know, letting them know they cannot sell this to other people. which they might choose to obey or not. But in the cosmetic and topical industry, I found it in a hard way that they would not want to sign anything with you.
Would it protect me if I? Well, I guess I couldn't do it. I was gonna ask you, could I get some IP protection? But until it's formulated, I don't have anything to patent, right, Marm? I mean, I couldn't do it anyhow at that point.
Yeah, that would be if you don't have a product, that would be tough to do.
Yeah.
What I would probably do, I can't give legal advice, and you know you're a lawyer, so
you're safe with me, Norm. No worries there.
I would definitely talk to either Rich Goldstein or a Yale Kibley on that, so you can get some specific advice on it. I do know you want to have that protection, but you might want to end up entering it with the old triple D agreement right before you do anything.
Okay. Yeah. I have an excellent IP lawyer who I'm pretty sure he wouldn't be able to do anything until it's ready to be trademarked. So by then the cat's out of the bag, the horse has left the barn.
So, Roslyn, another thing is that I found out in the cosmetics industry is they can easily reverse engineer your formulation. It's just a matter of time.
Oh, yeah.
So bear that in mind. They're very good in reversing engineering stuff. That's why you have a lot of these companies out there that, maybe they're selling on Amazon or wherever they're selling. They'll just take the product, send it to the lab, and the lab, there are some labs that specialize in reverse engineering stuff.
So is it worth it to do this?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right. Norm would give more advice on the branding and your marketing. See, you could sell anything to anybody if you have your branding and your marketing right. So your cream, you could have the best cream in the world. If you don't market it and brand it very well, it's not going to sell. And
oh,
you can
sure.
have the worst cream. If you can have the worst or decent cream and it's selling like crazy because you know how to package it very well. Your packaging, your marketing is so good. Norm will be the expert on that part.
I'm aware because I bought some of that junk in my life. Believe me.
Okay, so thanks, Roz, for that that question. And
thanks for answering it.
No problem. All right, Tisha, welcome to the stage.
Hi, hey everybody, how you doing?
Good, good.
Good. Thank you for bringing me up. I was listening to Rosalind's question and it caused me to think about my daughter's situation. So she is into the natural healthcare type stuff. She makes her own body creams, bath salts, bath bombs, things like that. And I was thinking or trying to help her figure out what would be the best course of action to be able to private label. She wants to keep it organic where she makes everything herself, but to be able to produce her product on a mass scale, it would be impossible. So I don't know how to direct her or what to do. And the places, people that I've taught, I mean, not the places, but the people that I've tried to get in contact with that could point her in the right direction, what to do, where to go. She's just not getting anywhere with it.
Avalon, you want to take?
Okay. So, Tisha, thank you for that. So when you have all natural products or all natural remedy, you might scale it in stages, right? You might You might want to talk to a smaller lab first, to take it to the next, to the level of doing, you know, 200 to 2000 units, right?
Okay. That
there are some smaller labs. They respect confidentiality. They're willing to just help you produce it and mix it on a very small scale. They probably have, the whole facility they have is probably 2,000 square feet. It's very small, right? You might do it in stages. So tell her to go to those little ones first. There are tons of them in Canada, honestly. Canada is really big with all natural products. I give it to them. They're really good with that. So okay. you might look into Canada to go to this lab. They call them labs or formulation labs. So you would tell her to send the, you know, ingredient list. Of course, you should sign the agreement, you know, tell them to do an NDA before sending all our mixes. So okay. She sends it to these smaller labs. The smaller labs will provide, they'll produce in smaller quantities for her. And mm-hmm. if she's selling a lot, or she wants to private label to other companies, then she's going to look at co-packers. They call them co-packers. These are people that do like a 60,000-70,000 units per hour.
Okay. And so here, co-packers, that's co-packers, co-packers.
Exactly.
Okay.
So they are more, they're geared towards, some of them have the packaging done even in their facility. They can do your packaging, they can do your printing, they can do the everything, the pouring, the sealing, the capping, the shrink wrapping. They'll do everything, the whole process they do. But they will require a larger quantity before you can get their attention. You may be talking, you know, 5,000-10,000 units. Then they want to talk to you. If you have anything less than that, they might not want to talk to you. That's why we have to use the first phase, like a smaller labs or smaller formulation labs. And they might be a little bit more expensive. Maybe they can make a bottle for you for like, who knows, $2. And when you get to the larger co-packers, it may be $1.50. So you're going to save when you start getting into larger co-packers.
Okay, that makes sense. So have her start checking companies that are in Canada.
Yes, Canada has a lot of those smaller. There are some in Florida as well.
Yeah,
there are some in Florida.
U.S. Like Canada does have a lot of natural organic labs, but yeah, right across the states as well. There's no shortage in them of them.
Okay. All right. Can I ask one more question? And I don't know if this is on topic or not, but I'm helping. I'm a tax professional, and I have a client who's trying to start a children's clothing, like online clothing boutique, but it's more of the off brand, name brand. I don't know the exact term for it, but like if it's a fake Gucci or a fake Burberry or something like that, they don't, it doesn't have the children's clothes don't have the actual logos on them, but they have like the Burberry pattern maybe, and she can't find any vendors like that.
So we call those replicas.
Replicas, that's the word. Thank you.
Okay. So those are replicas. It's a very gray line when you're doing replicas because the Burberry pattern is trademarked.
Right.
So you cannot successfully build a big business or scalable business, you know, doing replicas. It's just a matter of time they will get to him or her and they will shut it down. There's a big task force in the, is it CIA or FBI, one of the two, they're cracking down on replicas because, you know, the owners of the trademarks are filing complaints. So what they do is they will complain to China's customs and the U.S. border protection. And when they see products that are replicas of any of these brands, they will shut it down. So it's not a product that is sustainable. And many factories or many manufacturers would not want to do it. Maybe 10 years ago they'll do it, but now it's getting tighter. They might not want to do it. Tell her to create her own unique, you know, patterns and do it, you know, kind of do it the right way so that it can build a successful business. If not, she's just going to be looking behind her back all the time. You know, anytime somebody knocks on her door, she's like, you know, have they come to grab me or whatever? That's just going to be my 2 cents.
Okay. All right. And then do you have, or would you be able to point me in the right direction so I can tell her reputable vendors for children's clothing, like just regular, not replica type clothes?
Does she want to buy it in the U.S. or she wants to import it from China?
I don't think it really matters at this point.
Well, you know, she could start on AliExpress because I'm guessing she just wants to buy maybe 2 pieces or 3 pieces of different styles just to start. So mm-hmm. AliExpress would be the or Wish.com. AliExpress or Wish.com would be the best place to start with very little quantity until she grows it a little bit, and she can gravitate more to Alibaba. And then she reaches out to the factory from there.
Okay. Thank y'all so much. I appreciate your help.
You're welcome, Tisha.
Hey, no problem at all. Okay. So I think that wraps it up for this session. I will be back next week, next Thursday on Ecom Weekly. And we're going to be talking about content marketing, how to drive external traffic to your site, how it can affect your SEO. And our guest will be Shane Oglo from PR Reach. If you like what you heard in the room today, also, Startup Club has a variety of other entrepreneurial-driven topics and rooms all the time. All right, everybody. So we will see you next week at the same time, Thursday at 1 o'clock.